The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. My guest this week has sadly pulled out with fashionable COVID. So today's podcast is an opportunity to hear again an interview from last year, which frankly blew me away. Elliot Chapman-Jones from the Wildlife Trusts explains the curious and absolutely fascinating world of public affairs.
Basically, public affairs is all about putting your message, your organisation's message or policy into a way that government, civil servants and MPs, those decision makers, can really understand and also be convinced by. So we do this and we use this as an organisation to maybe raise an awareness of an issue or a cause, maybe change government policy or change legislation, some of the law that's going through Parliament, increase maybe public investment in a certain area, but generally just to cultivate political support amongst decision makers to make the change that we want to see.
Okay, I love the idea of cultivating political support because it all sounds very Machiavellian. So can we sort of unpack that a little bit? Because it's an area that most people know nothing about. We hear about special advisors, we hear about lobbying, which I suppose is the other name for public affairs. So what does it actually mean? What do you actually do on a day-to-day basis?
So contrary to popular belief, there's a lot more in public affairs than just being a lobbyist. Public affairs includes media relations, campaign management, advising people on policy. And of course, lobbying and talking to MPs is one part of the role, particularly briefing MPs on certain areas and meeting with them. But of course, we provide policy advice, so that's writing briefings. It's essential that we keep up to date with what's going on in Parliament, doing lots of monitoring and keeping abreast of political developments in order to advise the policy teams and maybe the campaigns or media teams on what's happening. We do media management as well. So if there's a press release or an article that's going to the media that has a particular political focus, we'll often help draft those PRs that are going out. There's lots of organising events as well. The big time for most people working in public affairs is September and October, when the party conferences are happening, and you'll see lots of public affairs people go there to help organise events. But we also help organise events in Parliament as well to try and reach decision makers. And of course, we work with other people in the sector. So as the Wildlife Trust, we'll work with lots of other environmental NGOs to help coordinate our public affairs activities so we get the maximum impact.
Wow, there's a lot there. Okay, so let's sort of split that out. So you talked about monitoring government policy. So is that literally just listening to what government says? Are you invited to meetings? How does that work?
It's a bit of a mix of both, really. So on the one hand, it's listening to what the government says. It's keeping abreast of any debates that might be happening in Parliament, any issues that are cropping up that MPs might be talking about that might be relevant to the work that the Wildlife Trust are doing. And so the Wildlife Trust can take opportunities of those debates and things that MPs are talking about in Parliament. But of course, we also work with civil servants and with government. So we will be invited to roundtables when we are particular experts on certain policy issues or issues that the government are trying to tackle, and also try and talk to government about issues that are really affecting the Wildlife Trust. One big one recently, of course, has been COVID-19 and the impact the lockdown had on environmental NGOs, particularly for fundraising, where we weren't able to get visitor numbers through the door and fundraise in the same way. So part of public affairs is also about issue management and crisis management. So we're talking to government really, really closely at the start of that lockdown to ensure we as an organisation had the help and support we needed from government to ensure we were able to survive that crisis.
Okay, so you, in order to do that, you must be seen as a trusted expert, you personally and also the Wildlife Trusts. So how do you get that position?
Absolutely. And so that's one of the key things of working in public affairs, is ensuring that we're a trusted voice. And as the Wildlife Trust specifically, what we like to do is work really locally with MPs. The Wildlife Trusts have 2,600 nature reserves across the country. And there are more Wildlife Trust nature reserves than there are McDonald's. So we have nature reserves in pretty much every MP's constituency. So we'll go and meet them on their local nature reserve, talk about the impact of the work the Wildlife Trusts are doing, and talking about some national policy issues as well as local stuff as well. So we'll also take MPs out. For example, we took a recent Secretary of State out onto a boat trip just off the coast in the southwest to talk about marine conservation. And so when you're meeting MPs or meeting decision makers, it's about finding things that really interest them personally and building that relationship. The meeting on the boat wasn't going so well that time, and he seemed slightly disinterested in what we had to say until suddenly we turned the corner and there were a bunch of seals just sitting on the shore, and his eyes lit up and he thought that was the most wonderful, amazing thing that he saw. And suddenly then you got a bit of interaction with him and he was just really started enjoying the meeting. So it's about finding those things that really interest certain MPs and to ensure that we can build the relationship and build the trust with the Wildlife Trust. There was a really good article written in The Guardian about 10 years ago now by an MP called Robert Halfen. And the article was all about how you successfully lobby your MP and build relationships with MPs. And one of the quotes I'll always remember from it is that you need to make it personal and make it local. He says, so what's the best way to persuade an MP to support your cause? It's simple. When you get an invite to a visit from a local branch or organisation, I will always go. He says, when I get a personalised letter, hand signed from maybe the chief executive, as opposed to someone like me, a public affairs person, that contains local statistics and information that are really relevant to him, how can he not fail to be interested? So part of public affairs is about ensuring that MPs understand and are interested and captivated in the message that the Wildlife Trust are able to deliver.
So now I'm very intrigued. Is it any MP, or I presume there's a hierarchy of MPs in that you probably want more cabinet ministers than junior ministers than local MPs, or does it not work like that?
All MPs play different roles and depending on what you want to achieve. So all MPs will be able to draft parliamentary questions, for example, table debates, amend legislation maybe if they've got a particular vote coming up. And of course, they themselves might be able to lobby a government minister if you want them to do something. So it's about really understanding the ask and where the MP, maybe they might sit on a select committee, for example. So you might want them to raise something at that select committee. Of course, if that MP then becomes a Secretary of State or a junior minister, we'll really want to kind of sit down and have a good relationship with them to tackle that particular issue. Maybe they become Secretary of State for the Environment, for example. But we'll look to engage all MPs and build relationships with them because they can all be useful in each in their individual way.
So there's over 600 MPs, aren't there? So that's quite a lot of work getting to know them all.
There are 650 across the whole of the UK. And yes, fortunately, with the Wildlife Trust, we of course have, as I said, nature reserves across the country and individual trusts working across the country. So they can help build some of those initial relationships. But I think for lots of people working in public affairs, you'll have to prioritise those people who you think are really important in a decision that might be being made or in raising awareness for a certain issue. And maybe it's because that MP is really interested in that issue. So it's about targeting the right people. And that's where the monitoring comes in helpful and understanding what's going on in Parliament and politics at the time, is that you're then able to find those right people to champion the cause and to make the change that you want to see.
So how does the monitoring work? I've got this sort of image of you sitting, poring through parliamentary debates and Hansard and then having a huge spreadsheet or a whiteboard. But I'm assuming it's a little bit more sophisticated than that.
Well, fortunately, there are some organisations which kind of provide tailored monitoring. And so you'll get kind of daily email updates of things that are happening in Parliament. And yes, you will have to scan through them and see what's happening in the debate and keep abreast of a situation. Of course, as well as keeping up to date with those maybe researchers or people who work, parliamentary assistants who work for MPs, to understand what's going on in Parliament and try and keep abreast of any debates that might be coming up.
So I'll come on a bit later on to sort of how you got into this and what characteristics a public affairs person needs. But clearly a lot of understanding about parliamentary procedures and a fascination with politics is going to be quite important.
Absolutely. And that's the kind of background I came from it in, is that I think if you're after a career in public affairs, you need to have a good understanding of politics, what motivates parliamentarians and MPs, and particularly how Parliament works. So I think a lot of people who come into public affairs have perhaps maybe worked as a researcher for a Member of Parliament before or worked for an MP. And of course, public affairs works in different ways for different organisations. You can have public affairs consultants, people that maybe work for an organisation that provides public affairs consultancy to multiple different clients. And so you'll be working in a number of different projects. Or you can have people like me who are in-house. And so I'm employed specifically by the Wildlife Trust to work on their public affairs work.
As I said, we'll come on to a little bit more about how all that side works in a minute. But there was something else you said earlier that I wanted to pick up on. You talked a lot about organising events, and you've just given a lovely anecdote about taking your MP out on a boat. So, again, do you spend a lot of time at party conferences and organising that type of thing? And how do you pitch those to get MPs to come to them?
Previously, of course, to the last 18 months, I spent a lot of time going out to site visits with MPs. Of course, over the last 18 months, it's been a bit more over Zoom, which has taken some of the shine off it. But it's one of the perks of the job, absolutely, for me, is to be able to go onto beautiful nature reserves and talk about an MP about national issues at a time that they can feel relaxed by and comfortable in. I remember after the 2016 referendum, 3 days after the Brexit vote, David Cameron came out on a site visit, and it was probably the most relaxed he's been in days after having to unfortunately resign as Prime Minister. Mm. But in terms of organising events, you'll be able to organise events in Parliament, and they can have a range of different setups and formats. It could be that you're trying to organise a panel to discuss a particular issue and get interested MPs in. It may be an event that the Wildlife Trust do quite a lot, is that we bring some of the individual wildlife trusts, so for example Kent Wildlife Trust or Cornwall Wildlife Trust, down into Parliament to come and meet their MPs actually in Parliament. And so an event like that, you'll have lots of MPs trying to come in and meet their local wildlife trust in Parliament to have a chat and maybe a photograph with them. For party conferences, you're right, the run-up to party conferences, there's always quite a lot of organising to get it all set. And most of the events at party conferences will be kind of panel style events or perhaps maybe a reception. And so that's part of the other part of the role, which is all about networking and contacts. So public affairs people need to be confident of being able to network and talk to people about issues and, you know, being able to work a room as well as, of course, work with lots of other organisations.
OK, I think we really do need to explore more about how you got into public affairs and what a career in public affairs is. So what got you started here?
So my before I worked for the Wildlife Trust in Public Affairs, I did work for a parliamentarian over in the European Parliament, actually, for a member of the European Parliament. And then I went on to work for a political party in campaigns for a while. So I studied politics. I've got a degree in politics. So my interest always came from the political side of stuff. But my love was always for the environment and for nature. So when I saw the public affairs role at the Wildlife Trust pop up, it kind of combined my two loves, really, of politics and that, you know, real news junkie style approach, as well as my passion, which is all about the environment. So that's how I got into it. So it's all about needing an understanding of politics. And if you're someone who loves all things political, it could be an excellent career path to tread.
So what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, as I said, a typical day at the moment, unfortunately, spends a lot of time on Zoom at the moment. It depends kind of what's coming up at the time. At the moment, we have a big piece of legislation going through Parliament, which the Wildlife Trust have been campaigning for just over a decade now. It's a new piece of environment legislation, a new Environment Act. So this is where public affairs really comes key, is because we've, of course, campaigned with government and we've used our public affairs knowledge and skills to try and convince government to bring forward new environmental legislation, which will help improve the state of nature in this country. So that's currently going through Parliament. It has a big process of going through different committees and different votes and different amendments through Parliament. So it's key to knowing what's going on in that process and when best to kind of help MPs propose amendments. So, of course, a lot of my day will then be spent talking to various MPs to try and convince them to maybe vote in a certain way or speak about a certain issue in a debate. There's also, of course, lots of engagement with civil servants as well, particularly for the Wildlife Trust with DEFRA, the Department for the Environment. So speaking to civil servants about different policy issues they might be working on, as well as working with other environmental NGOs or organisations to look at the public affairs that they're working on. So long story short, it's a lot of meetings, it's a lot of talking to other people and understanding what's going on. But of course, there's a lot of writing briefings maybe writing things for PRs as well.
Okay, yes, because one of the things you said earlier on was media management and feeding into anything that might have a political angle. So does that mean in the same way we had, I interviewed the lovely Thurza McSherry, your Director of Marketing Communications at the Wildlife Trust, a couple of months ago. And she was saying one of the things she had to do in planning campaigns was being aware of the public affairs. So there's obviously quite a link there. So how does that work? Do you advise that something's coming up politically that they might like to have a campaign on?
Absolutely. So if we're doing campaigning, for example, most of our campaigns will be driven by either the policy or public affairs, because we know that this might be a key moment, that the government might be bringing out a certain consultation on planning, or we know that, for example, the next few months it's planning on bringing forward a new planning bill, planning legislation. And so we want to build any campaign or communications around what the government are doing so we can try and influence it as best as possible. So I'll work really closely with Thurza's team, and particularly to make sure that if we're reacting to anything that comes out from government, the press or the quotes that we send out are something that can be quite hard-hitting and something that the government will listen to and resonate with the government, to ensure that we have our best political impact.
Can you give me an example of something hard-hitting that's worked for the Wildlife Trust?
No problem. I think planning is probably the best example at the moment, because, of course, the government have brought forward a new planning white paper, new rules on how it's going to change the planning system. And there's been a lot of disquiet, discontent amongst the Conservative backbenchers on some of the rules and some of the changes to the planning process. And this is partly where the political monitoring and understanding of what is going on in Parliament comes in. So we need to understand maybe why those Conservative backbenchers might not see eye to eye with the government's proposals. And so then what we have to try and play into that, and we have to, when we're issuing briefings or when we're putting out something in the media or maybe issuing a new report, making sure that it speaks to some of their concerns and speaks to our concerns, that the government starts listening to it.
So would you put that out in national media, or do you go down to local media in order to sort of hit a local concern about planning?
It'd be a mixture of the two. Because we have local wildlife trusts who work in every region of the UK, they'll be issuing lots of local media, and we'll help provide them with some support and some kind of political advice as well as media advice. But as the Wildlife Trust, essentially, we'll be putting stuff out to the national media.
You mentioned collaboration with other NGOs. So how does that side of it work? Because to some extent, you must be slightly in competition for things like fundraising, but presumably need to have a united voice when you're lobbying the government.
Absolutely. And the big moment of real coordination and cooperation between the environmental NGOs came at the other crisis moment over the last few years, which was, of course, Brexit in 2016. As you may know, most of our environmental laws and legislation came from Europe, as well as our environmental governance systems and how we monitor some of our environment. And so after Brexit, we had to discuss how this is going to be replaced and how we replace this not only equally to what we had before, but perhaps strengthen it. So it was a real crisis moment for a lot of the environmental NGOs, and thinking, how can we deal with this? We can't deal with this individually. So we came together to form something called Green UK, which was a coalition of 13 environmental NGOs. People like WWF, the Wildlife Trust, the Woodland Trust and the National Trust, all coming together to agree one position and try and coordinate and communicate that with government. Of course, there probably are rivalries for certain funding pots, and we will be bidding to the same funding pots, but that doesn't mean that we can't coordinate on certain messaging when it comes to big crisis moments such as Brexit.
I can imagine the conversations to get a united statement amongst 13 NGOs must actually have been quite involved.
It's never easy. It takes off a long sign-off process, but when something is as big as Brexit and could have possibly threatened most of the laws, the environmental laws that currently govern us, then crisis really deemed that we acted.
Okay, so one of the things I'm getting the idea about is that you've talked about a huge range of skills. Clearly you're fascinated by politics. I suspect patience is quite a big skill that you need in public affairs.
I've probably not thought of that, but I think that's probably right. Patience is really, really useful. Being a good communicator, I think, is quite helpful. To have very good communication skills and distill large amounts of complex information into digestible amounts you have to remember that most MPs have 101 different things going through their brain and different things that are trying to catch their attention at the same time. So what is going to make your thing stand out amongst them? Perhaps it will be the seal that they see on the boat trip that will make them really remember you. But maybe if you've only got 5 minutes to put together a briefing, that you have to be able to distill quite complex policy issues relating to the environment into something that is quite punchy and can be understood in 5 minutes. So I think being a good communicator is a really important skill for public affairs, as well as, of course, good relationship building. Being able to build that relationship with MP so they remember you next time you saw them and maybe remember what you talked about. But when you get it right, one of the great things about being as part of public affairs is that you're at the heart of where decisions are being made, of how the government's running the country, and you're working really hard to try and, what you see is, change that for the better, making sure that nature's into recovery, making sure that we tackle climate change. So if you're happy to spend your evenings networking, building up a good contact base and speaking to MPs, then it's definitely the job for you.
Well, I have to admit, I'm now totally inspired. But talk me through, if somebody else listening is equally inspired and wants to begin a career in public relations, where would they start?
So I think you can start from a couple of ways. If you've worked in politics before, that makes it a lot easier. I think maybe approaching some of those organisations which do public affairs for multiple different charities or multiple different organisations might be a good place as an entry-level role through that sector. But I think just trying to expand your knowledge of politics, expand your knowledge of what's going on in Parliament will really set you in a good stead into entering the world of public affairs.
Yes, because it's quite, there is a lot of obscure parliamentary language and things that you need to know, white papers, green papers, that sort of thing, which I can imagine if you don't have that at your fingertips, you're not going to be taken very seriously if you say you want to work in public affairs.
Absolutely. And I think the other really important thing is understanding what MPs are able to do, what's in their gift, and those key moments for what you want to change. So if the policy team comes up to you and says, we want X policy to change, or we want something to be different in this piece of legislation, you've got to then think about how that's going to happen in the parliamentary process, or how you might be able to convince government at key moments, key kind of political moments, that this is the time to change what you want to change. And so that's where the understanding of what politics is, how it works, but also how that then interacts with how Parliament works really becomes crucial.
And finally, I have to ask, we've got COP26 coming up. Is it a massively busy time for you, or is that not something you get involved with?
It is something we get involved with, and it is a very busy time for us. We, of course, have COP26, where of course, it's being hosted in Glasgow, so the government's attention is clearly focused on it. And this gives us huge opportunities, as I was talking about, in terms of political momentum and political opportunities to try and say, if the government wants to be a world leader at COP26, if it wants to show other nations how to really tackle climate change and restore nature, it needs to do X, Y, or Z domestically. So it's a really kind of key political moment to get the government to ramp up its ambition. And you might not know, but we also have another what's called Conference of the Parties, a UN conference in May next year, which is looking at biodiversity and nature. So not only will we have COP26 in Glasgow in November, but then a few months later down the line, we need to push the government for more ambition to help tackle the nature crisis as well.
So very exciting times in your line of work.
Indeed, very exciting, but I wouldn't trade it for the world. It's really enjoyable, and it's nice to feel that you're making a difference every day, hopefully.
Elliot Chapman-Jones, Head of Public Affairs at the Wildlife Trust, thank you so much for that insight into the world of public affairs. It's quite an obscure world for many of us, but that was a huge insight. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.